It's Wednesday, April 11th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 264 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 53 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
My name is John.
Two quick things to cover. First off, Fear the Con 5, obviously still coming up here in just a matter of weeks. For anyone coming in early for the tourism stuff, we will be starting Sunday night. Since people are kind of trickling in across Sunday, we'll just start easy with like a dinner somewhere nearby. If you are interested in joining the social stuff, obviously you're going to want to get hooked up with the Toft Bitch Network, the official Fear the Boot communication hub, which this year, unfortunately, my Toft Bitches are all going to be coming in a bit late. So as a result, Arlie and I are taking it over. If you are interested in being kept in the loop on that stuff, what I need you to do is go to the show notes. There's going to be an email address there and shoot an email over to that that has your name, your contact information, and if you are going to need a ride from like the airport or a bus station or something like that.
They might be able to help. Just so you know, it isn't a taxi service.
This is not a taxi service, but if we can help you out, please include your arrival information so we at least have some idea when you might be there.
Don't bank on getting a ride.
Also,
you might get stuck at an
Maryland
airport.
Maryland Heights is really, really close to Lambert-St. Louis Airport. So if you're flying in, it's really no problem to actually cab over.
Yeah, if you have to take a taxi over to Maryland Heights, it is not going to be that far. But if we can, we might be able to send someone out to get you or have someone nearby who can grab you. But send that to us, and what I will do is I will then make sure you have a phone number for either me or Arlie, which will allow you to get in touch with us and say, hey, we just got in town. Where are you guys right now? Or if we're on our way to a social event and you get lost somewhere in the streets of St. Louis and need help getting back to the hotel, once again, you can reach us. So once again, those activities will start Sunday evening, and I look forward to all those. Got some cool stuff we're looking at. The Star Trek experience is still at St. Louis Science Center, where you get like your picture taken on the Next Generation bridge and a bunch of crap like
Next Gen bridge? Screw that.
Yeah, well, you got to go with what you can get. There's some other stuff we're looking at, so definitely looking forward to that. And then, of course, the Wing Night on the Thursday, and then the con on Friday and Saturday.
Woo! I'm skipping the Kentucky Derby to go to this con, so you all better enjoy my game, damn
it. Wow. Should we get you a mint julep?
Yeah, actually, I would appreciate that.
Okay.
All right, so
see what I can do?
John?
Excellent, thank you. Yes, Blood Moon Goblins.
Let's talk Blood Moon Goblins.
It is around the clubhouse turn to keep this horse analogy alive. Keith and I are exchanging drafts of the cover as we speak. From there, I need to do some work on the intro and conclusion and then get into licensing it for Pathfinder and actually arranging for physical publication of at least the print copies and probably also a run that you'll be able to order from a POD service. A lot of people told me they would rather have the option of having a physical copy rather than just digital. CSB, it's coming soon. Hold on to your butts and get ready to be a goblin.
What is a CSB?
Cool story, bro.
Ah, got you.
Okay. TLDR.
TLDR. Okay, TLDR, I know.
CSB. But they're not R.
These young kids.
I guess.
DGF.
I work in IT. I have enough abbreviations in my life.
Mm. Enough TLAs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right. As we're going into 2012, or should I say moving through 2012, I mean, I guess April pushing May.
Moving to the end, as it were.
Yes. As we are now into 2012 and approaching the real heart of the movie season, I started putting together
the summer blockbuster.
I started putting together a list of movies for 2012, because as I've said on the show before, one of the things Carl and I like to do together, in addition to playing through story-based video games, is we go and see a lot of movies, just because it's something we have in common.
Those are the two things.
Those are the
two things.
You'll notice.
RPGs and movies. That's it.
The thing is that the video games they play are those really porny Japanese dating sims.
No, it's Custer's Revenge.
The movies they see
and
are
Bubble Bath Babes.
The really porny Japanese, well, pornos.
So they come over to my
those
house.
Porny pornos.
I don't know anything about that. I don't want to.
You know what, though? Do you have any idea how much money we have saved on kids? How much travel we've been able to do? It's all about the cost-benefit analysis. But anyway.
You know what? I can sit and I can play a video game on my couch and I can say, Sky, beer! He'll be like, why? And I'll be like, I'll give you the bottle cap. Okay.
The hell is he thinking? Is Fallout?
The kid has a bottle cap collection.
The bottle caps are more valuable than the beer.
He's stocking up early.
It's like trading in blankets for Manhattan. It's just a good move.
That's right, it is.
Or selling Alaska for like 7 cents an acre.
This guy's like, stupid daddy, he's drinking that nasty liquid. I get a f-ing bottle cap.
Bitches. All right, so anyway, so I sat down, went through comingsoon.net, and looked at every movie coming up.
Pat goes to that all the time.
True.
Soon. Why not now?
Coming again later.
You're so crass.
I know.
If I didn't recognize a movie, I clicked on it, at least read the synopsis, if not watched the trailer. And I made a list of every movie that either I definitely want to see this movie, like Dark Knight, or it's I don't have to see this
you
movie.
You said it wrong.
But
it's Dark Knight.
Oh, no, for this one's back. But then I also added to that list movies that were not ones I had to see, but were ones that if I was bored, they look at least interesting enough that I would go and watch them.
You got a Sunday afternoon freed up.
Nothing to do. Yeah.
Let's hit it.
Yeah. It's worth the couple bucks to go catch a matinee or something like that. And by the time it was said and done, my total list was 17 movies long.
Good Lord.
And maybe about to become 18, because Chad, you just kind of sold me on that. Was it Dark Shadows?
Oh, the Dark Shadows. Yeah, the Dark Shadows remake.
You know, when I read the synopsis.
Oh, it looks stupid.
Well, the synopsis sounded terrible, because it sounded like it was serious.
Yes.
And it was just like, this just looks awful. But once I saw the preview just now, and saw that it's actually a comedy. It's a parody.
Yeah.
It actually looks pretty damn good.
Yeah, we should make a night of it.
And
totally.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, so I'm adding that to, so maybe it's 18 now. All right, but I am curious to hear from you guys. Well, let's put aside the ones that every geek's going to see, okay? Let's not talk Avengers Dark Knight. What are the ones on your list for this year?
Avengers Dark Knight.
Yeah. All right, those aside.
You didn't say The Hobbit. The Hobbit.
Okay, oh, my God, Hobbit. The Hobbit.
What are the ones on your guys' list for this year?
Sherlock Holmes is Smog. Sorry. The guy who plays Sherlock Holmes in the Sherlock Holmes remake Smog.
Robert Downey Jr.?
Oh. No, Cumberbund. Oh, God.
Trollface.jpg. Click it right now.
So those aside, what are the movies on your guys' list this year, if you have any, that are a little bit outside of kind of, you know, the mainstream thinking that you're looking forward to? Chad, we can start with you on this Dark Shadows thing.
Yes.
Because you just sold me on it.
Yeah, Dark Shadows looks really funny. Did you ever watch the Dark Shadows, the original? And the See, I watched the original Dark Shadows, black and white. If you're not familiar with it, it's black and white. I'm going to guess 60s, I suppose. Soap opera. It is a soap opera that was kind of set in the, I'm just guessing on dates, it's kind of like set in the 1860s and the modern day, because it's about a vampire, Barnabas Collins. He lives all these years up into modern day and kind of like flashes back to the past sometimes. And it centers around a house, like this big mansion. It has all these characters and all these soap opera situations and stuff. But the characters are like a ghost, a vampire, stuff like that. And it's
like the Munsters.
Only it's a soap opera. It's not. No. It's not. It's played totally straight.
There's another soap opera like that where like there's like a witch who has.
Oh, that's Passions.
Passions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she has like a doll that comes alive. That's Timmy. Played by a midget.
Yep.
Dark Shadows was.
I was exposed to a lot of culture in the 90s.
It's so corny and so low budget. Like they're doing a tracking shot following two actors walking down a hallway in the mansion, and the camera bumps into a wall, and the wall shakes because it's a flat, and the camera shakes, and they just keep rolling with it. They just keep going.
That's awesome.
And it's just like so cheesy. It's hilariously bad, and all this really hammy overacting, and then they remade it in the 80s, I think, and it was really bad in the 80s. Like, they corrected all the stuff that made it good, like bumping into walls and stuff, and they played it straight up, and it was like stupid knots landing with vampires. Dumb. Tim Burton and, of course, Johnny Depp and his usual Danny Elfman and all those people are remaking it, and it's Barnabas Collins, 18, whatever, gets turned into a vampire, gets locked in a casket, and then gets freed in not modern day, but like 1975. And it's just hilarity ensues. It's hard to sell it. Because
you have to watch
it. It's this certain look and it's this certain line delivery and it's the jokes are really punchy. And
the synopsis looked dumb.
Oh, yeah.
The cast, Tim Burton and all, not my bag.
Sure.
I get why some people like it. Not my bag.
He doesn't hit everyone out of the park.
But when I watch the trailer, if I remember, I'll link it in the show notes. If I don't link it, just go to YouTube and do a search on Dark Shadows 2012 trailer. Yep. You'll be able to find it. Pat, anything you got coming up this year?
I'm probably going to hopefully see the big names that you're talking about, because I haven't seen 18 movies since my kids have been born. So I don't have that kind of time, unfortunately. But actually, one of the ones that's on your list that I was surprised by, because I saw the trailer when I in one of the movies I caught recently, was the new G.I. Joe movie.
That was the one I was going to get to. I'll defend why it's on my list.
I'm saying I'm excited to see it, too, because the trailers looked f***ing great.
Well, because that was the first one. I've not seen the movie.
I haven't either, and I don't plan on it, because it's horrible.
The trailers looked awful, and I've heard that the movie's as bad as the trailers. Yeah. Because they wanted to do bullet time wire foo crap.
Yeah.
And rather than keeping it more to, well, let's face it, G.I. Joe was really the basis of Command and Conquer. You just had the GDI and Nod instead of G.I. Joe and Cobra.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of doing that kind of story that was more postmodern.
Was it really?
Yeah, really. More of this postmodern military thing about this American special ops force that draws on people from other countries, but it's still an American-based thing, going up against this high-tech terrorist organization with an unknown leader and an unknown background. Instead, they introduced all this ridiculous crap, and everybody was wearing powered armor, and it wasn't cool powered armor, just made them move like ninjas, and it had one of the weigh-ins for us. It just looks like crap. And when I watched the trailer for G.I. Joe Retaliation, I first saw what was coming up, and I'm like, oh yeah, there's no way I'm going to go see this. But by the end of the trailer, I'm like, you know what? Everything that looked horrible about the first movie, they've fixed.
Yeah.
It's now more of a, it's got a little bit of comedy to it, but it's more of a military run-and-gun sort of thing about a group of special ops soldiers fighting a high-tech terrorist organization.
And what, at least
and
when I saw
they ditched
it
all the power on, armor. And
it focused on Snake Eyes and
Storm Shadow.
And Storm Shadow, yeah.
And Storm Shadow.
There's a lot to
and
that.
And they do a shot at Cobra Commander, and I don't know if it's Cobra Commander or Zartan, because this one's supposed to focus around how like Zartan is like manipulating the world leadership through his abilities for impersonation, forgery, and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it looked pretty cool. Now, it could be awful.
Yeah, it could be one of those things where the trailer is the best part of the movie, which happens a lot. But I don't know. Like I said, I saw the same thing, and I agree with you, Dan, on this one. When it first came on, you know, you don't see it's G.I. Joe until something obvious comes on. But then I saw it, and I'm like, I started, like, you know, I did the total eye roll. I'm like, oh, God, I can't believe they made a second one. But then I started watching it, and it just second by second, I'm like, okay, this looks good. This looks interesting. And yeah, by the end of it, I'm like, okay, I want to see this.
Yeah, trailer sold me on it. I will see it. I may regret seeing it, but trailer sold me on it because it is everything the first movie wasn't, and I mean that in the best way possible.
Two more movies.
Okay, go ahead.
They're coming out this year. One of them is Django Unchained, which is a Quentin Tarantino movie. You know how Quentin Tarantino did World War II? This time he's doing a Western.
Ooh.
And he's not remaking Django, which is a spaghetti Western movie from the 70s, I think, which is actually a really good movie. I haven't even seen a trailer for it, haven't seen a preview for it. I'm a huge Quentin Tarantino fan. I have seen every single movie Quentin Tarantino has done except for his college film project, which he only shows when he does a film festival. And I don't live near Texas, so I can't see him at film festivals. Not everyone's a Tarantino fan, not everyone likes him, and I get people's criticisms of him. I am a huge Tarantino fan. I really like his stuff. And I also really like Westerns, too. Especially the kinds of Westerns that Tarantino likes. Those sort of grindhouse, 70s exploitation, spaghetti Westerns.
Right.
The other movie that I don't know if this is going to be good or not, but I'm willing to give it a shot, is Snow White and the Huntsman. Have you seen previews for this?
I saw previews for it. It didn't move me. It's not on my list, but it could become movie number 19 if somebody that I trust. Like, you go and see it and say, Dan, you will like this movie. Go see it.
Right.
And then I will. I did the same thing with
John Carter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great movie. I loved it.
Trailer looked passable. Mm-hmm. Several people I knew, including you, went and saw it and said, yeah, it's a really good movie. And I went and saw it. I did enjoy it. Yeah. You know, it's
not my preferred Clarence Carter.
Clarence Carter of Mars.
Yes, that was the best.
Snow White and the Huntsman looks interesting. Looks like a lot of action. Looks like a lot of fun. It's the adult take on Snow White, not Pat's adult movie, take adult on take on Snow White. No. That's a different movie.
Yeah. Snow Job White.
Yeah. My take my take on that would not have vanilla in it. I'll just leave it at that.
The problem I have looking at the trailer is the trailer showed too much. The trailer kind of showed the beginning, the middle, and the end of the movie. The trailer is very long, and it revealed a lot of stuff. I have found that when you have a trailer that gives it all away,
that's all you got.
That's all they got. Yeah. And so I'm not going to see it opening night, $10, $12 performance. I will probably see Snow White and the Huntsman if the critics don't completely destroy it. And on like a couple of weekends after 11 o'clock showing, that's a $6 show.
So here's, I've got a bitch about this because this is something that Hollywood does, and they've done it more often, it seems like, in the past, say, decade or so. You've got Snow White and the Huntsman coming out this summer, and there's also another Snow White movie. I think it's Mirror, Mirror, or something like that, with Julia Roberts.
Well, that's a kid's movie.
Well, I know,
That's an episode of Star Trek.
Well, I know, but same IP in the same year. It's like, why do we need to do this? In other instances, I can't think of, you know,
A Bug's Life and Ants, well, Deep Impact and Armageddon. These concept movies come in pairs.
Well, that's true. I mean, you get, but you know, they've done it in the past where it's not necessarily one is an adult movie and the other's like is really aimed for kids or, you know, like the teenagers. Why do we feel that got this one idea, you know, another company has it and they need to put them both out at the same time? I don't like that. It pisses me off and I don't like it. It makes me mad.
The whole reason they're doing Snow White, the Julia Roberts Snow White, is because that picks up an audience that will never watch Snow White and the Huntsman. So I think Snow White and the Huntsman's rated R. It's pretty brutal. Yeah. It's a lot of action and blood and vicious darkness.
I think you're wrong because, in this case, because Vanilla's in it. So all these freaking...
It's girl that played Bella's.
Yeah, I'm picking up on... I wish Shovelface was in it, too, because that's the most awesome name ever. And Dan will probably link this so that you guys will know what I'm talking about.
If you want to know what Vanilla and Shovelface are, I will link this in the show notes. It is very much worth watching. And
absolutely, it's the best.
It's got a little bit of strong language, but it's more or less safe for work. Yeah. It's got some profanity, but it's more or less safe for work.
Normally, I would totally agree, and you are right, but I think in this case,
there's
going to be a lot of crossover because since Kristen Stewart is in this, or whatever the hell her name, and Vanilla, since she's in this, all the teeny boppers that have like dry humped themselves on the Twilight series are going to go see it because she's in it there too.
Have you ever watched 5 Second Films? It's a film website.
Yep.
And they do
the guy with glasses.
Yeah. No, it's not the guy with glasses.
But the ship can't sink.
They did the opening night on test screening for Twilight, the first movie. They're in a movie theater and they go up to the seat and they press the seat and it's all wet and they hand it up and their hands glistening and they go, it's good movie.
Oh my gosh.
That's exactly what I was talking about. That is it.
Wow. So, yeah.
Should I have told that story on Kicked in the Dice Bags and
Yes.
Probably.
But see, he told it in a more graphic way than I did, but that's exactly what I mean. They're all going to go see Snow White and the Huntsman because she's in it.
My sister-in-law is a Twi mom.
Well, here's where they messed up. Whoa. You know what? With Snow White and the Huntsman, the main guy or the love interest, it's not Shovelface. If they put Shovelface in there, boom, they would print it with more horrible story.
So what annoys?
I can keep going.
Please,
I've got the Italian hand motion going.
It's just like, what do you think you do?
Dan has to turn me down now. I'm so fired up.
God, you really love Twilight, don't you? So,
Edward was mine.
What movies are doing nowadays that I don't like, or Hollywood, the Hollywood machine is doing that I don't like nowadays, everything is PG-13. Yeah. And I understand why they're doing it, because unlike a lot of movie fans, I get it's a business first, it's art second. You make something PG-13, the whole family can go see it. You make something rated R, only half the family can go see it. You have to leave half those ticket prices at home. So everything is getting toned down to be
unless you're raised by barbarians.
That's the thing, though. You don't,
like me,
have to if you take the whole family
but the
to a PG.
Won't. Statistically,
well, if the parents are with them, but they just don't. No, so yeah, right. You're right. And it is. It's a business. So yeah, that's what they're shooting for. Is everything's PG-13. And as an adult consumer of movies,
right.
I don't want to see that a freaking 13-year-old is okay with. I want to go see an adult movie.
You know what?
Daddy's got the big pants on now. Let's see something that's entertaining. But we're not the market.
I don't have.
We are a small part of the market.
I find it annoying.
You answered your question.
I get why they're doing it. It doesn't enrage me as Pat is all fired up from his Twilight rant. Like, I saw John Carter. The level of violence, which was not much, and there was blood and dismemberment and all that sort of stuff, fit the movie. Hunger Games, young adult novel, saw that, enjoyed the movie. Level of violence was nice. It fit the story. It fit what they were going for. Shaky cam was
a little too much.
I think they did the heavy shaky cam in the beginning of the movie, and they kind of laid off it. They toned it down.
When they were doing that at first, I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, this is going to be horrible.
It was one of those movies where they shove the camera up somebody's nostril, and they move the camera around for dramatic effect.
Thanks, Blair Witch Project.
But it got better. I mean, it was much better later on. It was just it. Yeah. But when they started off like that, I was worried, I must say. But I felt like I needed to put a seatbelt on
in the movie
theater. And Pat, you said yourself, though, a moment ago, that since you have kids, you've kind of stop going to movies by yourself and shopping for yourself. You more shop with your kids in mind, or at least a lot of parents do. So, I mean,
that's why.
Oh, I don't. I'm not saying I understand it, but I'm just saying, you know.
On the other hand, I have a kid, and I see rated R movies, and I go to movies by myself.
You know, I'm disappointed by,
but then I'm weird too because I go to movies by myself.
I'm not so per se disappointed by them toning our movies down to PG or PG-13, but what I wish they would do is come back later with an uncut version. For example, with Dark Knight, when they first took it to the ratings agency, was it the MPAA or whatever it is, they gave it an R rating. Yeah. And so they had to go back and change around and cut a few scenes to get it down to the rating it got.
See, that is a perfect example.
And I was really hoping that they would release a DVD of the original full cut that had whatever it is they took out. I have no idea what scenes they removed, but they
probably
didn't.
Probably an F-bomb or a nip slip.
Well, and that's what pisses me off. The thing.
You want your F-bomb.
I wouldn't be surprised if in a year or two down the road, they will release that, Dan. It's just they trickle this stuff out slowly.
I don't know. Nolan's a little bit more.
Well, it depends. He's a little more kind of. You know, you'll see that a lot in the Blu-ray, DVD/Blu-ray market is every 6 months to a year, a new version of an old movie comes out to make more money.
Because they're getting you to buy what you already own. They saw it works for Star Wars.
You look at Nolan's fight with, I don't know, is it 20th Century Warner Brothers? Where the hell he's doing
this? The Hollywood machine that crushes artists.
Well, but that's the thing.
Takes the soul out of movies. Also makes movies and gets them made.
They wanted him to re-record all of Bane's lines. Mm-hmm. And he has refused to do it. Mm. You know, this is a guy who really does kind of stand for his art and has just been successful enough that he can get away with doing that, I guess. So,
well, see, and that's the thing. This is a perfect example of sort of what I was getting at is there are certain movies that I just want them to be gritty and have that R rating. I don't want them to be toned down to PG-13 so that it's okay for everybody. Like, I'm sorry, but Batman, especially in that setting, does not need to be toned down to PG-13. Let's see it the way it should be. Like you're saying, let's have a way to be able to see it.
I don't know about that.
I know it's not going to happen because
Batman
doesn't have
much blood in the comic books. I mean, a lot of those punches are pulled. It depends on which version. Well, I mean, that's Frank Miller Batman, that's one thing, but
this is American movie culture. Basically, what gets you the rating, it's not the violence. The violence is okay. It's, oh my God, there was a booby.
That's what I was going to start railing.
Actually,
that's what it is, man.
Actually, it's different. It's a sliding scale. The problem with it is that there's a difference between your vanilla R, the chick Bella from Twilight, there's a difference between her R and Arnold Schwarzenegger's R. Arnold Schwarzenegger can do a lot of stuff before he gets an R. Whereas somebody like whoever this woman is who plays Bella, she can't do very much in her movies, and then she'll get an R. And it's this sliding scale.
There are a lot of politics to this day. Yeah. And I liked the movie. Okay, I'm not bashing the movie. I do not understand why Lion King is not PG.
Right.
The only reason it is G is because of Disney. There's killing. Yeah. There's sexuality in it.
Nala. TF.
He puts her in the missionary position and gets down on her.
No, she tops from the bottom with her sexy eyes and her licking.
Well, the point being, though,
I don't
watch it. You were true. In that age group when it came out, weren't you?
I do not understand why that movie's not a PG.
Well, now that's the thing. If that movie were
was when the re-release was issued,
if that movie
fall.
Were made today, it would be.
Oh no, because well, Disney would not be.
Well,
there's
okay,
no way.
But I, you can go back.
If the same,
I'm talking about this before. You can go back and look at the movies that were made in the 70s.
Right,
there was a lot more stuff in them, and they were rated PG.
And
now this is
hairy.
Before. This was also before they came out with that magical PG-13 rating.
Right. Well, so what PG film off. For the Temple of Doom? There is no chance Temple of Doom would not get an R today.
You have to understand, too, you can shoot a movie that will rate PG-13 and it will rate R, and you can have the same exact scene in it. We'll use a violence example. John and I's character's in a fight, and I punch him. It shows on camera my fist intersecting with his face. You know, blood flies, and that's throughout the movie, R rating. If I go to punch him, and there's a clever, tasteful camera cut where it moves away and you hear the sickening crack, you know he got punched. And in fact, forgive the pun, the impact of the shot is much more to the audience because it's in the audience's mind. They don't show you. They kind of tell you it's the Alfred Hitchcock thing.
Right.
It's that implied violence. That impacts the audience more, and that gets a PG-13 rating. It's a win-win-win. It's a win creatively because you impact the audience more, and you get the coveted PG-13 rating. That's what you're seeing a lot of.
Yeah, The Hunger Games is a very good example of that. Because that's the most recent one I saw.
They kill
kids. They did that, yeah. And
I mean, I'm not talking like teenagers, 18-year-old kids. I'm talking it's 12 to 18. They kill 12-year-olds in this movie.
They're all teenagers. And
Yeah,
but all the major deaths in that movie, it was exactly the way you said.
It's implied.
You saw the hit or the weapon being thrown or fired. Then you didn't see the impact, but then you saw they cut away and then they cut back to you see it. In them,
there's a great
but,
scene.
Not going into them. It's
there's a great scene in Fight Club, and it's where Edward Norton's character, who is unnamed through the whole movie, Edward Norton's character.
Oh, he's named. Spoiler.
Oh yeah. Oh, ship sinks too. But Edward Norton's character, he realizes all this stuff happens, and he beats the crap out of a guy. They go to a fight, and in the fight in Fight Clubs, you're just supposed to knock each other around, and that's it. He destroys a dude. Puts him in the hospital, right? Well, they don't show that fight. They show all the buildup to it. And then when he goes to do it, the camera cuts and it shows all the guys in the Fight Club around him. Doesn't show him. And it shows their expressions, their faces. And you hear the pounding and you see the people reacting to the brutal violence. They had to do that because Fight Club's rated R. And when they filmed that scene and showed it, they got NC-17 rating. They had to do that, and it switched over, and they got the R rating that they wanted, and the director was like, this is more violent than us showing the fight.
Let's move off of movies and onto role-playing games, but before we do, I have to issue a special request on behalf of Chris, because Chris wanted us to talk about a very serious issue. He had suggested that we discuss in an episode unacceptable player behaviors around the table.
Surviving.
And when...
Beep, boop.
Oh, yeah, by the way, Power 16.3 is still up.
Vote for me or die.
And vote for you and die.
And then die later.
It's Final Fantasy VII. Anyone who plays this game, Eris is going to die.
Shut up. She comes back if you beat it 7 times walking backwards.
But
my buddy did it. He told me about it on AOL People Connection.
We've talked about unacceptable player behaviors at the table since Fear the Boot began. So when Chris provided clarification.
In fact, we're a living case study in motion.
He gave one specific behavior, and I wish he was joking, but he's not. This is his topic. Farting at the table. Now,
because Chris has never done that on a podcast.
No, 57-28, nothing. No, games are serious business. When it's
That's
at
right.
the gaming table, it's completely different. I'm sorry, I just can't give this any serious discussion. Which, because if I could, I would wait till he's on the episode as opposed to blindsiding him while he's not here to defend himself. You know, I'd be less of a about it.
So, Dan, seriously. Are you pro farting at the table or anti farting?
Well, let me express my views in the following way. After Fear the Con 4.
I thought you were going to fart.
I wish I could. I cannot fart on command as much as I wish I could.
Pat can fart the national anthem.
That I can.
Pat is definitely the farter in chief.
Yes. I am pro, by the way.
Pat can fart in 8 channels.
Yes.
It It's like a MIDI file.
Impressive.
But, that's what Darth Vader said after hearing you fart. Most impressive. Yes. So anyway, at Fear the Con 4, we sat down, as we do after every Fear the Con, and had our hosts and planners powwow of, okay, what did we get right? What do we get wrong? What do we need to think about for next year? Just kind of giving our own debriefing. And Chris genuinely requested that we no longer serve chili at the con, Stacy's signature wonderful chili.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Because he got tired of people farting.
Sorry, Stacy. Your chili, you know, it might be tasty, but get the fuck out. You will.
Because shut the fuck up right now.
Kidding. Because Chris did not like all the people farting at his table. So while Chris is not around, while the cat's away, the mice will play. I want to.
I don't understand.
Dan, he's all fired up from Twilight. Now you're going to get him all fired up on farts and chili. I mean, way to go.
Well, I'm trying to work this out because, Pat, I'm on your side. Vanilla and shovel face, all right?
You're just not near his backside.
Yeah, no, I'm on your side, not your back.
That's wise. Okay?
Don't have your back. No one
so
has your back.
During Chris's games, Chris is running, I think, two games, both on Friday, because he's not able to be there Saturday.
I'm going to crop dust him.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is during those games, I am going to make at least one stop by Chris's gaming table.
And if you just lay one out right on him.
No, I wish I could. I will have with me a bunch of physical medals. Okay, I'm talking actual medals here. If you have a bowl of chili at Chris's gaming table that you are eating when I happen to walk by, you will be awarded a medal. If you are able to actually produce a fart while I am at the table at Chris's game.
I don't think you know what you're asking.
I know exactly what I'm asking for.
I do too.
Then I will have something more. I have decided what.
Armageddon.
There might be a gold.
Guys, we need to pull the Fear the Con t-shirts off of Cafe Press. We have a new slogan. Ruben, we need a new symbol for Fear the Con. It's just a tooting butt, and it says Fear the Con 5, Fartmageddon.
Yes.
And it's a little
perfect.
Gerbil.
Yes.
But
shotgun.
I will give you a medal if you have the chili in Chris's game, and I will give you an additional word. Like, I haven't decided yet. I'll find something if you are actually able to produce a fart.
I just love the fact
when I am there.
So we're having our post-con reflection period of, let's go over this. What worked? What was good? What was bad? What do we need to focus on? What do we really need to try to strive to do to be better next year, to make it better? We always want to improve. And Chris's wholehearted, his serious answer is less farting.
I thought he was joking. I seriously thought he was.
That's advice for life.
I thought like he was just like doing the deadpan comedy thing, like dry wit. Because I love dry wit. So I thought he's going for the dry wit sort of thing.
I don't think he want a dry wit or wet wit.
What's wrong? What was wrong with Fear the Con 4?
Poop.
Too much gas. Really?
He is wrong. Fear the Con needs more beer and more farting. It can't.
Yeah, I would say you really want to start a
really
start a riot. You should
don't
you should
think
go
you
on
know
and say
what
that he
you're
also
asking
that,
here. I really no don't think too. You understand the scope of what you're
that's
creating.
The after con shirt. It's going to be the shirt for the con. It's, Fear the Con 5, say, versus
they
mine.
They should all be brown.
The after con shirt is going to be Fear the Con 5, you just had to be there.
No, the after shirt for Fear the Con 5 is going to be Fear the Con 5, for the love of God, don't light that cigarette.
Johan, you better quit. Or when you get lit, you're going to blow up. All right, so let's talk about something else here. Let's talk about
my client without opposing counsel present. You're going to ex parte
no.
me.
Farting.
I was just suggesting he not light up a cigarette around farting people. I said nothing about the issue he's on trial for.
I think it was.
Oh, speaking of which, yeah, we still need to pick out a prosecutor. And I'm thinking we're going to bring back Jim, who was the furry we interviewed, because he's an attorney.
Oh, is he really?
I'm thinking he's going to be the prosecutor.
I was not on that interview.
Because if a man knows how to out somebody, it's going to be a goddamn furry. Okay? I'm just saying. So what we want to talk about here for a gaming topic is something that was suggested by Trigger Happy and was expounded upon by Chad a little bit. The basic question started off with, how do you adapt an intellectual property, a book, a movie, a TV show you really like.
Into, like Dark Shadows.
Into a role-playing game. At first, I was kind of like, I don't have a lot to say about this. But the more we kicked it around, the more I kind of realized, okay, we do have quite a bit to say about this. Let me start this off with the first question that I would ask. You've sat down, you've played a video game, you've watched a movie, whatever. You've decided you just have to make your own fan-based Mass Effect, Buffy, whatever role-playing game. The first question I would ask is, what are the players supposed to do? Because in many intellectual properties, granted, not all, some are better and worse on this scale, but in many intellectual properties, they tell a specific story about a specific place and about a specific group of people, and many of them do not imply, or at any rate don't really develop, a story or universe beyond the world they are dealing with. Unless we're talking about Dune, which came, I believe, in the original theatrical showing, had an explanation sheet of the setting. Yeah,
they had handouts.
Did they really?
Yes, they really did.
They had handouts. Wow.
Because they cut it from 6 hours down to 90 minutes or whatever it was. They had handouts that explained what was going on.
That's terrible.
It is terrible. Yes, it was. All right. But that's my first question.
Had Sting.
Yep.
What are the
players? Kyle MacLachlan in it.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect Muad'Dib.
Patrick Stewart.
And Patrick Stewart. And it had the guy, he was on Quantum Leap, he was the
Sam.
He had Sam.
I forget his name.
Yeah, and he was on Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, he was the doctor.
Are we going to talk about, because if we're talking about movies, we can just turn this into a bonus episode.
No, no, we can talk about games.
Okay, okay.
You're the one who brought Dune up.
Yeah. You know what we're like.
I know.
This is you.
All right.
You should have had the prescience to see this coming.
That's true.
Leave that in.
Remington is a killing word.
I don't know.
Are no killing words in Dune. God damn it.
There's one here.
My name is.
That is a killing word.
Dan, that's a little dry.
It was a dry.
Dan,
fire.
How many times in your life have you fired a shotgun?
A handful. I fired both a 12 and a 20.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Just never this one.
Okay.
This gun has never fired a shot. So I take that back. It's fired one. What a crime. Ghostbusters. The first question I asked is, what are the players supposed to do to, number one, make sure that there is a potential for player action apart from what is being told on screen? Because I think the worst thing you can do in attempting to adapt an intellectual property is say, I enjoy the experience of watching, reading, playing this IP, and I want to keep that going via role-playing game, because that's not going to work. You have to understand that there were things about that experience, about its presentation, its word choice, its cinematography, its script, whatever it was that fit into that IP. And you cannot just sit down and recreate that at a gaming table.
Yeah, I mean, like, look at Black Stallion, the book, the movie, whatever. Great book, great movie. Can't really turn that into a role-playing game because there isn't enough to do. I mean, I can't even get out of the starting block. Well, what kind of system? I can't even get there.
Right.
Because it's about a story about a boy and his horse and the struggle and all the things.
Role-playing game example. Yeah. Let's say that you start with the Dragonlance novels. Let's say there wasn't a Dragonlance setting. And you say, I want to adapt this to D&D. Well, the first question I'm going to ask is the players, look, I've never read these books. I don't know a damn thing about a setting. That's another hurdle we'll get to in a second. But the question is, look, I don't want to be any of these characters. I want to be my character. I want to do my things and tell my story.
Right.
Are you just trying to recreate the experience of reading the books all over again with me as an actor? Because if so, this is not a good place to go as a role-playing game. I mean, you may have enjoyed it. Great. Wait for a sequel or write some fanfic or whatever works for you.
No, don't do that.
But don't.
I'd be like, TLDR. Skype Tracy Hickman and ask him. My next game is Tuesday.
But the second angle I would ask that question from, what are the players supposed to do, is to ask, what are the kinds of things they're supposed to experience? Because I think the heart and soul of any role-playing game is getting down the kind of experience and the kind of story that you are trying to tell. Is this supposed to be something that's fantastic or gritty? Are they supposed to be out solving mysteries or having slapstick shenanigans? And yes, I recognize that within a good setting, you can have a variety of stories being told. But if you can't give me at least an elevator pitch on some of the possibilities of how parties can fit in and make a meaningful impact on the world and have a really worthwhile experience, then I think you have just admitted the IP is only as big as the story they already told. There is no place to go with this. It's just not going to work in all probability. Chad, there's one you brought up.
Oh, crap.
Let's go ahead and talk about this.
No.
What if they don't know the IP? let's say tomorrow you really want to run a Doctor Who game for our group. I have watched a single-digit number of episodes of Doctor Who.
You've actually watched a whole episode of Doctor Who?
Yeah.
I didn't even think you watched that.
Yeah, I did at your place once some years
back. Did I tackle you, tape you up, and force you to watch it? Because that's something I would do.
It was one of those nights. We're just like BS around late into the night, and PBS had it on.
Yeah.
And it was the episode where it's like a snake cult, and he was able to, like, there's like a crystal, and Doctor Who's able to, like, focus his mind through it. I don't know. I'm sure
there
it is.
There was a sonic screwdriver.
The point being that, yes, I have seen a couple full episodes of Doctor Who, and I've seen clips of a lot of episodes, but I sure as hell don't know enough to really tell you much of anything about the setting beyond the things that have become cultural icons. Like, I can tell you vaguely what a Dalek or a Cyberman is, and that's really about as far as
I have
yet.
How would
you run this for me?
I've watched over half of the Doctor Who's in existence. I am not through them all yet. I'm just over halfway there. How would I pitch it to you?
Well, or not even pitch it to me. Let's say
how would you run
it? How would I run it?
Yeah.
Ooh, well, because say we have our group here. Right. So we have you and John, who are not Doctor Who fans. I assume you're not a Doctor Who
fan. No, I don't give a crap about Doctor Who, so your pitch better be pretty good.
Yeah, and you have Wayne and Pat, who are Doctor Who fans.
Okay.
So I would really try and steer you guys into playing characters who are innocent of the setting. They're normal people, so to speak. Or, you know, you could even play aliens who don't know what the wider world is. And then I would have Pat and Wayne play characters who are more in the know. And then I would make the game about discovery. Problem with that is that works, but that's kind of done. It's like, okay, we do that for that one, and now we're playing Dune. And maybe you guys haven't read the Dune novels, and Pat's running Dune. So Wayne and I play the people who know what's going on, and then you guys get to play the schlubs again.
Yeah, but in Dune, you can make it work because the characters come from such different levels of background and experience.
Right. Well, and same thing in Doctor Who.
Atreides thug versus Fremen straight from the desert.
Same thing in Doctor Who, though. I mean, you could have, like, Time Lord most advanced race in the galaxy who is working with Earth citizen from 1382. And that happens in the show, and that works fine. But it's that concept. I would really make the game about discovery. You know, I would give you some base information so you could hit the ground running, and then I would try to avoid throwing the heavy tropes at you guys. I wouldn't make it about Daleks.
Right.
Like, I might throw Daleks in there, but I wouldn't make it about Scarrow and the Dalek War and all this, like, deep history, canon-heavy stuff.
Going along this path, I think that when you're working with an established IP, just my personal opinion is that I think it's important for, say, the majority of the people that are playing in it to be at least familiar with it. Not that they have to be, you know, intimately familiar with it, but, you know, in Dragonlance, they've read the Dragonlance book, so they're familiar with the world. Certainly your GM has to be. I don't think you just decide as a group, hey, let's play Dragonlance. None of us have any idea what it's about. Let's just pick up the books and go from there, because the discovery, yeah, you're going to be discovering, but I think it's going to be a nightmare. And again, this is for, like, an established IP. I think, you know, you should know about what you're getting into. Now, on the other hand of that, if you want to play something where no one but, say, the GM knows about it, that's where you're getting into, like, your homebrew systems.
Right.
That's where everybody's new except the one running it, and everybody's discovering it at the same time. But I think, you know, again, like for me, I think if it's an IP,
depending on the group, I think you also may be able to get away with assigning a little bit of homework.
Right.
For example, with the game that I run for my other group, the Star Trek game, most people listening to the show will say, well, that's easy. Even if I don't know that specific era, I at least get the gist of Klingons, Romulans, or whatever.
Sure.
Well, here's the thing. The people I'm running this for, with one or two exceptions, are not geeks.
Yeah.
When I tell them a Romulan comes along, I have to explain what that is. What I ended up doing is, yes, there are some things where I explain it along the way, or I'll let them do timeouts or kind of back up and be like, okay, here's what's going on here. Or I'll be like, eh, you don't want to do that in front of this guy for this reason, and let them rethink their action. But I also did give them a little bit of homework because they were willing to do it. Mm. You know, they said, hey, could you give us a little bit of background so we kind of can wrap our heads around this? And in this case, the FOSSA Star Trek game came with something called the Cadets Orientation Sourcebook that had, within about a dozen pages, you get the gist of the setting. I suggested certain episodes or movies to them. Our first campaign was set in the movie era. And I said, if you just watch Star Treks 2, 3, and 6, you'll basically have down everything that you need to, in order to follow what's going on here.
Here are the good ones.
Yeah.
I think,
watch these.
I think that if you're talking about a popular established setting, I think that the Game Master needs to run it at a level where he could say, read the Wikipedia entry on this.
That's another great place.
That's what I would do. I would, if I were running Doctor Who, I would tell you guys, read the base Doctor Who Wikipedia article, because there's like hundreds of sub ones off of it, but read the base Doctor Who article, and I'm not going to punish you for not knowing anything that isn't on there.
Yeah, precisely.
I'm not gonna punish you anyway, but maybe I'll give John a spanking, but that's just kicks.
That's just give me what I want out of a role-playing game.
That's right.
The next thing that we got to deal with here, in addition to setting, is obviously rules. And I'll go back to that central question of what are the players supposed to do? When you're looking to pick out a rule system, obviously you've got the same choice you always do when you have a setting sans rules, which is build versus buy. Mm-hmm. You can either take an established rules set like GURPS, Savage Worlds, D20, and you can plug this game into that and run with it. And depending on the setting, that may work perfectly, and that's all you need to do. But whether you're going to build or buy, I think what you have to look at is, first of all, what is the nature of the conflict that this story primarily deals with? Now, it may deal with many, but is this IP about combat? Is it about survival? Is it about diplomacy? Is it about tension? You know, what are the things that make this story work? And as a result, these are the things that you're probably going to want rules of some kind. They don't have to be deep rules, but some kind of mechanic to represent. For example, Chad, in the case of Inception, you saw the movie Inception, wanted to adapt to a role-playing game. Since the dream is a construct, and the more the dream gets messed with, the more unstable it becomes. And if it collapses, you lose the dream. A Jenga tower, the dread thing, worked perfectly.
Yeah.
I would not use a Jenga tower if I was running a Jericho RPG.
Yeah.
Because,
or a comedy Ghostbusters RPG.
Right. I would probably not even use D20 for something like Jericho, because
Like anything where an attack can be immediately fatal, because I wouldn't either.
But the other thing that I would look at is, in addition to the nature of the conflict, is what is the feel of the IP? Is it gritty?
I would play a Jericho RPG, by the way.
Skies of Glass earlier in the history. I mean, that's pretty much what it would be, is Skies of Glass earlier in the history, and instead of a conspiracy, the world really has been nuked.
Mm-hmm.
But
hey, 50 minutes, 5 years, 50 years.
Yeah, precisely.
Wait, but what's that?
It's the idea that we have for Skies of Glass, that this reaches back way back in the day, is that Skies of Glass, as everyone knows it, as we've pitched it on the show, takes place 50 years after the bombs drop.
Yeah.
But the whole idea, if we were to make Skies of Glass as this omnibus product that we hand somebody, the setting and rules and everything is there so that you can run a game 50 minutes after the bombs drop, 5 years after the bombs drop, and 50 years after the bombs
drop. You basically get three stages of the immediate panic and chaos, the society is trying to form, and then society has formed and is now seeking a concreting.
And this is all non-written down, just conceptual, talked about, is that you could actually do a long campaign starting at 50 minutes after the bomb and play the same characters, if they live, all the way up to 50 years.
The other thing that I would hit on here, and I don't want to deal with the rules and whatnot too much, because in dealing with this topic, I really want to focus on what is unique about trying to translate an IP like into a role-playing game. I'm not trying to do a rehashing of the game design series, which once again is something we will retackle someday, but that's not this episode. So if you feel like I'm kind of shortchanging the topic, that's why, as I'm trying to just talk about certain traits of this act, not everything that would go into it. But when you're looking at a rule system, in some cases, there may be a rule system you can adapt already in place. For example, if you guys wanted to play a Final Fantasy game, I would dissect as best as I could the game math from one of the Final Fantasy games. You've got an attribute system. Mm-hmm. You've got character classes. That right there, as long as I can kind of reverse engineer the math or go find someone who already has, that's going to serve as a pretty good system.
Transformers already has stat sheets on all of the characters.
Bingo.
All the
you
boxes.
Just have to figure out how to tie them all together, which is what I did in creating my Transformers role-playing game.
You just got to have those little red stripes.
I always lost those.
But One thing I would say is, while it is always tempting to build versus buy, don't bite off more than you can chew. Because when you're already having to figure out, what can my player characters do? What kinds of things that they can play? What kind of story will I tell? What's out there in the setting beyond what is covered within the intellectual property? All that stuff. Trying to perfect a rule system on top of that, you're taking a big undertaking and making it bigger. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying sit down and count the cost before you set out to do it, because, you know, it'd be better to have the setting in place, and if you have to, I guess, savage it or something, as opposed to never completing it because of the fact that you spend forever trying to get everything done, which is a big undertaking. I mean, there's a reason why role-playing books take, you know, a long time, months or years, usually years, to develop and have credits that's more than two names long.
Unless you're Kevin Symbieta, and then you can do one-arm push-ups and eat nails and get out riffs.
Glitter.
Glitter boys. Oh, yeah, there's the next best seller.
I got to take a big Symbieta.
Well, since Johnny...
Hey, there's no Symbietas at Chris's table.
No. Those aren't... Nobody actually Symbietas at Chris's table. They just...
Yeah, by the way, if someone outright sharts at Chris's table, I'm not rewarding that.
How would you know? Are you going to check?
If I have some way of knowing...
I'll sniff them out if they delve too deeply or too greedily.
Man, I really want that grand. I want that grand Symbieta prize from Dan. That's what the grand prize should be. The guy who collects the most medals at Fear the Con for farting on Chris gets a signed copy of Riffs by Kevin Symbieta. We are.
It's not
never
signed by Kevin Symbieta, but it is signed by somebody, no, and the Riffs is by Kevin Symbieta.
I have a copy of Riffs that is signed by Kevin Symbieta.
Never mind.
A fan gave it to me.
You will only have it for another 3 weeks.
You know what? There's something I need to post with this show. If I remember, I'll do so. I'll dig it off my phone. I was in a gaming shop the other
day.
We are
never, ever getting Symbieta on an interval show, are we?
No. There was something I took a picture of when I was in a gaming shop the other day. I don't remember if it was Riffs or Robotech. It was one of the Palladium games, and they had this beautiful pocket-sized version of the rules book, and it's like, industry, if Palladium gets this, there is no excuse for the rest of you. I loved it. I almost thought about picking it up.
Why didn't you?
Because we never play it.
You're made of money. You've got a whole shelf of books we'll never play. Are you kidding me?
But at least,
look at that. There's Legend of the Five Rings right there. Is that
we haven't even played Legend of One of the Rings.
Is that Alternity? Are you seriously going to run? I've run and played Alternity.
I have both run and played Alternity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, Tom Burst was running and letting me play an Alien from Danvers, even though this wasn't a Danvers game. Anyway, I think
I actually kind of enjoyed Alternity.
I did too.
I didn't see what the big hate over
it wasn't
was.
My favorite game in the world, but yeah, I didn't deserve the hate it got. So I didn't think so. So I think we're going to wrap this one up. As I said, someday we may come back to a longer design series, but that's not what I want to tackle this show. Check out the show notes. See y'all at Fear the Con. And beyond that, have great games and a great week. And we will catch you next time.
Try not to fart.
No, try not to Symbieta.
Oh, yeah.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.